and fund life-saving research to give every baby a fighting chance. Give them tomorrow at marchofdimes.org/tomorrow.
From the Claude Brayman Motor Cars Studio, you're listening to News Radio 1290 WJNO, an iHeartRadio station.
The thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the sponsors and don't necessarily reflect those of this station or iHeartMedia.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. Join us now to learn ways to begin the path to recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. Learn more at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
And here we are, Sunday afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to the Family Center for Recovery show. And I am your host, Peter Nathan. We appreciate you making us a part of your Sunday afternoon. And with me today, my very special friend and guest, Marcia Martino. Marcia is the executive director over at NAMI. Marcia, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
So, background. Could you maybe tell for our listeners a little bit about yourself and NAMI and how you got involved and yeah.
Great. Well, I've worked in human services for my whole career. Worked in neuro rehab most of the time, people with brain injuries and neurological issues. And I happen to have a family member who has mental illness. And so I first became involved with NAMI because of that family member. I contacted them for some resources. And that's when I lived in Maine. I moved to Florida, and the place where I was working actually brought NAMI in to do provider training. And that's where I kind of became reconnected with NAMI, and eventually I was on the board and then became the executive director of this amazing organization.
So NAMI. NAMI is an acronym for?
National Alliance on Mental Illness. And we are the Palm Beach County affiliate. So it's a national organization. The headquarters is in Washington, D.C. And then we are one of the 24 or 26 affiliates in Florida. So our affiliate just covers Palm Beach County.
Yeah, I was reading earlier. It started, when did NAMI start? I think it was like 1979, and really has grown to be quite the organization.
The national organization has been around longer than our local affiliate. Yeah, our local affiliate became incorporated in 1983, I believe.
Okay, excellent. And then we're talking a little bit earlier as far as mental health disorders, as far as some prescribed conceptions about, yeah, maybe kind of go over for our listeners a little bit about mental health disorders and
sure.
Thoughts on that.
Well, 1 in 5 people in our country will have a mental health disorder, mental health condition at some point in over the year. And a lot of people think, oh, no, I don't have a mental illness, or no, that doesn't affect me. But it's actually 1 in 5, and 1 in 5 includes people who have depression, who have anxiety issues. It's actually 18% of the American population has an anxiety disorder. So people, lots of times when they think of a mental health condition, they'll think of someone who has schizophrenia or someone whose mental health condition is perhaps untreated and very noticeable. But there are many of us who have mental health conditions who go to work every day. We're great parents, we're great spouses, great employees, but we may have a mental health condition that's being successfully treated.
So for our listeners that are out there right now and they're thinking, okay, maybe there's some signs or some things that are going on, what might be some things that our listeners might want to think about, and also as far as services that are offered over at NAMI that they could maybe come to you on?
Well, it's almost half of the people who have a mental health condition actually never get any treatment for it. Hmm. And that's unfortunate because most mental health conditions are very treatable. So someone who is having trouble sleeping, changes in their eating habits, changes in their enjoyment of life, And sometimes people think, oh, well, that's just part of life. But many of these things are actually very treatable. So often the first place someone will go is to their primary care physician and let them know what's going on. Many mental health conditions are treated by a primary care physician. And if they feel that it's something beyond the scope of their practice, they may make a referral to a psychiatrist. But that's actually a smaller percentage of people. So getting some treatment, whether that's medication or therapy, and actually medication plus therapy is typically the most successful treatment for people.
So as far as like services that are offered now, I mean, is NAMI, let's say clinical, do you actually do? Or?
No, we don't provide any clinical services. If someone calls us and they feel that they have a mental health condition and they need help, we can help someone connect with a doctor, a psychiatrist, a therapist, whether they have insurance or they don't have insurance. We can kind of talk to them about their needs and about what kind of insurance they have and help them look at a direction for getting clinical services. NAMI services are not clinical in nature. And what often happens with someone with a mental health condition is that they often become isolated. They stop hanging out with their friends, or their friends stop hanging out with them. They often become isolated even among their family. They stop going to family functions, or perhaps they stop getting invited. And so often by the time someone contacts us, they have become very isolated. The person with the mental health condition, and often if it's someone living at home with their parents, the parents often become very isolated. So they've lost that support network. They've lost that support system, which we all need to stay mentally healthy. So when someone comes to us, we can connect them to the correct clinical services, but we have services that teach people about mental illness. It teaches people about keeping themselves as healthy as possible, and it helps them to rebuild a support system, because that ultimately is what they need to be able to maintain mental wellness throughout their life. And Mental Health America has a saying that is before stage four. And what that means is that for most illnesses in this country, physical illnesses, we're taught to catch it early. To look for signs and symptoms and get help before it progresses to a stage four of the illness. In mental illness, we wait until we're in crisis. We wait until, and for some people, that crisis never comes, and they live kind of in stage two or stage three for their whole life in misery, where treatment could really help them. But before stage four is to keep people mindful that get help early. And get back on your feet and don't lose your support system. But for NAMI, one thing that we do really well is connect people with each other, connect people with a support system, and to rebuild that and keep themselves healthy.
An excellent resource. If you've just joined us, you've tuned into the Family Center for Recovery show. I'm your host, Peter Nathan. And with me today in the studio is my very special guest friend, Marcia Martino. Marcia is the executive director over at NAMI locally here. And we're talking about, as far as family. Let's talk a little bit more family. I know when we were visiting the other day, you mentioned there's an excellent, was it a 12-week?
We have a program called Family to Family. The really interesting thing about NAMI is all of our programs and services are delivered either by someone who has a mental illness or a family member of someone who has a mental illness. So they're developed at our national office. They're evidence-based or best practice. And then there are some very structured trainings that people have to go through. So our Family to Family is taught by two people who have a family member with a mental illness. And it's a 12-week course, once a week for 12 weeks. And it teaches the family member about mental illness, about the various mental illnesses, about medication, about working with their family member, how best to communicate with someone who has a mental health condition, all just different ways that help them to live better with someone with a mental illness, but to be as supportive as possible, and to not be to not be judging that person, to really to be supportive, to have their interactions be helpful to that individual. We've had so many comments. Our feedback from that class is amazing. People say it's life-changing.
The thing that I gathered the other day when we were talking was is that families now are with other families and are able to talk about things that normally wouldn't be able to talk with other people. They're starting to realize that, geez, you know, there's somebody out there who has the same things that I'm going through.
As a family member, you often become very leery of even talking about, you know, at first, if your family member has a mental health condition and you're worried, you're scared, you talk to family and friends about it. But, you know, after a few months or years, you know, people are tired of hearing about it. And yet it still is affecting your life in a major way. I mean, we were talking about just the challenge of being able to get a good night's sleep if you're living with someone who has a mental health condition. They often have sleep issues. So your family member may be up all night. They may be threatening suicide on a regular basis. They may be having behavioral outbursts and punching holes in your walls. Well, after a while, like, people are kind of tired of hearing about that. So people become very isolated, and you feel like you've got this weird life that no one else lives. And when you get together in family to family, it's like, wow, these people have the same issues, the same concerns. And I remember when my husband and I took family to family, and it was 7 or 8 years ago now, and the class that we were taking, that particular class, happened to be scheduled on Saturday. So it was 12 Saturdays in a row. We work a lot of hours during the week. So I thought, okay, 12 Saturdays, we'll make it to most of them, but probably not 12 Saturdays. After the first class, we scheduled our life around that. That meant so much to us to go to that class. We wouldn't miss it for anything. I mean, it was like coming home to this group of people who got it for the first time in many years. So it's really a pretty profound experience. And for many people, my husband and I included, many people stay in touch with the people in their class. They form, you know, friendships and get together. And, you know, this is someone you can call if your family member's having a problem. Just, you know, you're not asking for a solution, but you've got someone who can understand if you talk to them.
Yeah, that's the thing that I was gathering was, is that the support system that develops, and having somebody else that you can confide in, that you can call, and you the bonds and the things that you share during that program that's offered. Other thoughts as far as about the program and things that you've been able to, the peer-to-peer also sounds, I mean, as far as by having somebody who's
absolutely
involved.
The peer-to-peer is a similar class. It's taught by two people who have mental illness, are stable in recovery, and that's a 10-week class. And so that's for people who have a mental health condition. And you know, for so many people with a mental health condition, life has kind of gotten out of their control. They may have been involuntarily hospitalized. They may be pressured to take medication they don't want to take, or they're not taking medication and people are judging them for that. They may have lost a lot of family and friend support. So when someone, they have to be stable enough to be able to attend this class and participate in it. But it helps people learn how to maintain stability in their life. You know, mental illness is a chronic illness, and this helps people learn ways to keep that chronic illness at bay.
So we're going to be going to a short commercial break, and we're going to be talking further about programs and things. If you haven't got that pen and pencil, might want to get it. We've got a lot of really cool things we're going to be going over further once we get back. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back after a short commercial message.
You're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show. Find out more about the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook.com/Family Center for Recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. We'll be right back. The Family Center for Recovery in Lantana is the only treatment center in Florida owned and operated by a triple board certified psychiatrist. This means the Family Center for Recovery does treatment the right way. They treat substance abuse, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, anxiety, teens and adults at all levels of inpatient care. Check out the innovative, life-changing treatment the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana has to offer at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Water. You rely on it daily, but what do you really know about it? There is so much more to H2O than you realize. Did you know that tap water provides us with a low-cost way to stay hydrated, public health and fire protection, and nearly every product that we use every day? The more you know about your H2O, the more there is to love. To learn more, visit drinktap.org. This message is brought to you by the American Water Works Association and your local water provider.
Welcome back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find the link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
And we are back. Thank you for making us a part of your Sunday afternoon, wherever that may be. If you're out a picnic, out on your boat, or just doing some errands and driving around. You just joined us. This is the Family Center for Recovery show, and we are talking today with my good friend over at NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Illness. That is Marcia Martino. She is the executive director. We're talking about a program, peer-to-peer. So, Marcia, yeah, could you maybe go expound a little bit more as we went to break on the program and how that works for our listeners?
Sure. Peer-to-peer, it's a 10-week class, once a week for 10 weeks, taught by two people in recovery from mental illness. And it teaches people how to maintain stability in their life. So it looks like mental illness as a chronic illness. There will be times that people will be very stable, and there are times that they may have flare-ups. And it helps people to learn ways to maintain stability in their life, how to work with their doctor, about medications. Don't just stop your meds. If you're not happy with them, work with your doctor, how to work with the symptoms of the medications, the side effects, and have a partnership with your doctor. It talks about stress relief, keeping stress levels lower in your life, because that obviously is something that can trigger more issues for people. So just all different ways to keep themselves healthy, out of the hospital, and stable.
Before we went to commercial break, I was mentioning you might want to have that pen and paper handy. And I know there's various support groups. Support. Can we talk a little bit more, and maybe some groups that are out there?
Absolutely.
For people?
We have ongoing support available for people who have mental health conditions and for family members as well. So we have groups called NAMI Connections, and those are support groups. They're run by, as I had said before, all of our programs and services are run either by someone who has a mental health condition or a family member, and they've received sort of nationally developed training for programs that are developed on a national level. So we have the NAMI Connections. We have one at our Lake Worth office that's Saturday from 6 to 7:30. We have one in Delray that's at South County Mental Health Center. That's Mondays from 1:45 to 2:45, and then there's another one on Wednesday from 10:15 to 11:15. And then we have one in Jupiter that's on Mondays from 5:30 to 7:30. So those are weekly. And then we have a really great young adults support group. It's the first three Fridays of the month. That's in Lake Worth. And that's from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And that is for 18 to 35-year-olds. That's a very active group, really very interesting and vibrant group of people there.
Excellent. And all valuable resources and co-occurring. A lot of times with somebody with a health disorder, we're also looking possibly some type of substance use disorder. Can you maybe expound on that a little bit more for our listeners?
About half the people who have substance use disorders also have a co-occurring mental health condition. And it can make treatment a challenge. The standard, the protocol is that they should be treated concurrently. And often they're not. I mean, people will maybe have their mental health condition is not diagnosed, not recognized. They may go to a standard addiction treatment program that really does not treat the underlying mental health condition. And then the person may stabilize there. And those tend to be kind of structured, controlled environments as well. But when the person gets out in the real world and their mental health challenges kind of come back into play, they may find that the way that they are relieving their symptoms is through self-medication. And I know we had talked a little earlier, Peter, about kind of how that happens. Mental health conditions often emerge in late teens and early 20s to mid-20s. And at that time, when someone's having an issue with depression or anxiety, feeling the challenges of life and feeling that they can't handle them, there aren't a lot of people or even parents who say, gosh, let's go to a psychiatrist or let's go talk to your doctor about it. You know, they kind of, go chill out. And so what is the first easy thing to turn to? And it's alcohol or pot or some drugs that are, you know, they're very accessible to people. And unfortunately, in our society, they're more socially acceptable than going to a psychiatrist. Or even, I mean, there are people who are very, very reluctant to even take an antidepressant. They think it's going to change their personality. So they'd rather have some alcohol or smoke some pot. And then those things become part of their life and the way they're medicating regularly with them. And then, you know, that can lead to an addiction.
And quite often, it's you start to look at the resources. What do people have available? Do the insurances, or how do we pay for this? And sometimes that might be the easier route. But also having a chance to learn about services and NAMI and what's available, there is a different way. There's a different avenue and place that they can go. And your thoughts as far as we're talking about self-medication and somebody as far as resources and things
that are
available.
Well, there are people who are like, oh, I can't do that because I don't have insurance. But and that can be challenging, but there are places that will give pro bono services. There are places that will take Medicaid. There are places that will take various insurances. So if someone is wanting to get help and they feel that they don't have an option because they don't have money for that, if they give us a call at our office, our number is 561-588-3477. We have a full-time family support specialist, and she really does an amazing job at helping connect people to services in the community.
And that's such a valuable resource. That's a lot of listeners are out there listening or saying, gosh, now I have some place I can go, some place that we can go and talk and have as far as being able to at least get some advice or support.
It's
and things
a challenging
along those
system
lines.
Or lack of system. There really is not a coordinated system. So there are a lot of resources to try to piece together and figure out.
So if you just joined us, you tuned into the Family Center for Recovery show, and I'm your host. It's Peter Nathan, and with me today is Marcia Martino. She's executive director over at NAMI. Switching gears a little bit, we're talking about as far as law enforcement and a type of training. What was it? CIT?
CIT, Crisis Intervention Training. That's available. The PBSO, Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, offers that to their officers, and some of the other towns specifically offer it as well. It's voluntary, and it's a 40-hour training. It was developed in collaboration with NAMI on a national level, and it teaches the officers how to interact with someone with a mental illness. There's actually some really interesting role playing. It teaches about mental illness, about you know, medications, but a lot of role playing when they come upon a challenging situation, how best to interact with someone successfully.
Yeah, because, I mean, when we start to look at law enforcement, a lot of times that's where people are shying away from. And they're like, geez, I don't know if I really want to make that phone call. But after talking with you a little bit, I'm learning that, no, there's training available. And they're becoming more aware of as far as public and perception and being able to help. other thoughts as far as, I mean, other agencies involved too in this area?
Well, we do. We often get calls from family members who are really feeling like something needs to happen and maybe they want to call the police. But you're right. There is a lot of fear about that. People are very apprehensive that that might not be a good encounter. If it's not an immediate emergency, well, first of all, if it is an immediate emergency and someone's calling 911, we usually suggest that that they make sure that the person knows that their family member has a mental health condition and to specifically ask for CIT-trained officers. Sometimes that can't be accommodated if it's, you know, the closest people are not CIT trained. They want to get someone there quickly. But it doesn't hurt to ask. And the other thing, if it's not an immediate crisis, we suggest people to call. There's two teams. They're called Mobile Crisis. One's available through Jerome Golden, and the other one's available through South County. Now, these are licensed clinicians that will go to someone's home, and they will talk to that individual. They will talk to the family, and their goal is to try to avoid hospitalization. So they might be able to. They have some ways of kind of encouraging people to see a psychiatrist or see their doctor or to take their meds that they were prescribed but they're not willing to take them. Or, you know, they're a great group of people. And when they come out and do the assessment and talk to the person, they may feel that that person needs to go to the hospital. And if they feel that, they will call the police to transport them, but they will stay there till they get into the police car. They will actually meet them at the hospital if that's requested. And it's a kind of a little bit of a softer transfer for that individual. And also, I encourage family members, if they feel a crisis might be looming, call Mobile Crisis and talk to them. I had someone from Mobile Crisis said they wish they had a different name. But call them and talk to them about what's going on and see if they can come out and help. They'll problem solve on the phone, sort of that crisis coming situation.
Yeah, when I start to think of maybe a family or somebody that's in crisis, I start to think of, well, let's see, what could that possibly be? It could be something domestic related. It could be related as far as suicidal. What are your thoughts on some of the things that maybe if somebody is out there and they're thinking, geez, I might want to make that call, what would be a situation?
Well, commonly you'll hear things like they see the person's decompensating, they're not sleeping, they may be volatile. They may be aggressive. Maybe they haven't hit anyone, but they're threatening. They're punching holes in the wall. Or they're spending day and night in bed, and they're just not getting out of bed, and they're not eating. They've lost 10, 15 pounds. They're not willing to get out of bed and go to the hospital or go even see their primary care physician. You know, it can kind of go both ways. The person can be too aggressive or just not moving at all. Or maybe they notice that they've become very paranoid. You know, they're afraid that they're being watched and they're afraid to go out of the house. And, you know, there are often, it doesn't just crop up overnight. A family member can see something escalating, and they know the writing's on the wall that it's not going in a positive direction. And this is a really good time to call Mobile Crisis.
That's an excellent, excellent resource, and also gives some ideas to our listeners as far as situations where it could be of value and of use. Before we go to commercial break, thoughts?
You know, I think if someone has any, is listening to this and has any idea that, geez, you know, maybe something might be able to help me when I thought it couldn't, give us a call, 561-588-3477. We'll problem solve with you and help you get in the right direction, get some help.
So if you haven't already got that pen or pencil and a piece of paper, we're going to be going over some other things as far as some events that NAMI has that we'll be going over. So we'll be going to a short commercial break. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll be right back.
The Family Center for Recovery is the only facility in Florida owned and operated by an addiction psychiatrist, Dr. Robert Moran, and he's dedicated his life to helping the people no one else will. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Family Center for Recovery in Lantana is the only treatment center in Florida owned and operated by a triple board certified psychiatrist. This means the Family Center for Recovery does treatment the right way. They treat substance abuse, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, anxiety, teens and adults at all levels of inpatient care. Check out the innovative, life-changing treatment the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana has to offer at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
News Radio, I'm Karen McHugh. Talking about the Barcelona terror attacks on Sunday morning TV, Maryland Democrat Senator Ben Cardin says the Trump administration needs to do all it can to deter further incidents.
What the Trump administration needs to do is articulate a strategy that uses all the tools in our military and diplomatic toolbox, working with our allies to not just shrink the caliphate of ISIS and related groups, but to stop the exporting of terrorism in Europe and beyond.
Courtesy Fox News Sunday. Meanwhile, the president met with his national security team over the weekend to discuss the fight in Afghanistan. The defense secretary says details are forthcoming.
The president has made a decision, as he said. He wants to be the one to announce it to the American people, so I'll stand silent until then.
James Mattis, who's flying to the Mideast for meetings with U.S. allies. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Are you looking for a new career path? Want to make a difference in your community? Become a teacher. The American Board can help you earn a teaching certificate and a Florida teaching license in a year or less. American Board's online program allows you to set your own schedule for a price that fits your budget. Visit www.americanboard.org. That's americanboard.org for more information on how you can become a Florida teacher.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
And we are back. Thank you for making us a part of your Sunday afternoon. We appreciate you listening to us. And if you've just joined us, you've listened to the Family Center for Recovery show. I'm your host, Peter Nathan. And with me today in the studio, Marcia Martino. Marcia's a good friend of mine. She's the executive director at NAMI. And we are going to be talking about marijuana. What are some of the things that we're finding out about marijuana and your thoughts as far as the research and what we found?
Well, I think for some of us who grew up in the 60s and 70s, we kind of look at marijuana as a pretty benign, harmless kind of recreational drug, but research is showing that that it actually causes some pretty significant changes in the brain in a brain that is not fully developed. So what they're finding, studies have shown that marijuana use prior to the brain being fully developed actually increases the lifetime chances of psychosis. And that's pretty disturbing, particularly for some people who are in a higher risk population, maybe who have some mental health conditions in their family history. And not sometimes, but it is something that with the increase in the availability of marijuana and the stronger marijuana that's now available, it is something certainly to be concerned about. So we have a general meeting coming up. We have them once a month, an educational meeting. And this one that we have coming up is on August 31st at 6 o'clock at our office. We're on St. Mary's campus in the Molly Wilmot building. And it's on marijuana and brain circuitry. And our presenter is Dr. McLean Bolton. She is a researcher of disorders of neural circuitry function at Max Planck. And she's on our board as well. Lovely, lovely person. And she is going to come and speak on the topic of marijuana and brain circuitry. That's August 31st at 6 o'clock.
That sounds like an excellent, excellent meeting to be at as far as the latest in research, especially with Max Planck and the valuable things that they've done and are continuing to do over there. As far as thoughts regarding, I know that there's certain cultures, populations, we're talking a little about African-American.
African-American population is at higher risk for mental health disorders. Their incidence is higher because they have a higher statistics, greater occurrence of homelessness, exposure to violence, and those are issues that increase the chances of having a mental health disorder. So they have a higher incidence, but they actually have lower access, lower use of resources. So and some of that is financial, and some of that is cultural. There is still a strong belief in the African American community that we keep our problems to ourselves, we don't share them. That we there are some churches that believe that mental illness is a punishment from God. Those beliefs are certainly changing, but those are kind of long-term culturally held beliefs. And things that we're trying very actively to change. NAMI has a very large, has put a lot of resources into reaching out to the African American population. We have a whole segment on our, on the national website. There are programs, specific to reach out to the African American population. And our affiliate has particular presentations and PowerPoints that we've used to reach out specifically to the African American population and just educate them on risks and symptoms.
That's excellent. As far as the outreach and to inclusion, as far as the website, I know we've kind of mentioned a lot of topics, a lot of things that I'm sure our listeners would love to just know more about and be able to go. The website for NAMI is?
Our website is NAMI PBC. So it's NAMIPBC for Palm Beach County, NAMIPBC.org. And we have on our website, we have all of our support groups, for individuals. We have family support groups that meet once a month. They're on our website. All of our activities, everything is listed on our website. And then we have some local resources as well. We also have links to the national website, which has some amazing information on various mental illnesses, on the political agenda for reducing stigma that we're promoting nationally, improved health care coverage for mental health conditions. So huge, amazing resources on both websites.
Yeah, I know it was only a few weeks ago, and you had just gotten back from the national meeting, and there were a lot of really neat things I remember you mentioning or talking about. Was there something in particular that you might want to mention to our listeners as far as the takeaway from when you were there?
What I love about the NAMI National Convention is that NAMI's whole philosophy is to value the lived experience, and we certainly value clinical resources and the need for them. But NAMI values also the lived experience. And, you know, if you have a mental health condition or you are a family member, there's nothing like talking to someone else who has the same challenges. And so the NAMI National Convention is amazing in that way, that it is really so honoring the courage that people have in facing the challenges that they're facing, and sometimes just getting up every day and going about life is difficult for people. So it's very inclusive, very honoring, and just an amazing experience.
So if you just tuned in, listening to the Family Center for Recovery Show, I am your host, Peter Nathan, and Marcia Martinez joined us in the studio today. She is from NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, locally here, Palm Beach County. And we're talking about as far as support. And there's a lot of activities I know that we were talking about over break that are available.
We try, you know, I talked about rebuilding support networks and having ways that people can connect. But we try to maintain those connections then. So we have There is actually a group called Peer Council that meets monthly. That's people who have mental health conditions. And then they meet and plan social activities. They're going on a Delray cruise coming up. They just had a pool day. But we also have things that are available to family members and to people with mental health conditions. We get some amazing free and discount tickets to Kravis events. And we can get 20 to 40 people attending Kravis events. Anything from bowling to Kravis to cruises. We just, and actually once a month we have a dine out for NAMI that we go to a different restaurant each month, and part of the proceeds go back to NAMI. That information we keep on our website. Just all different ways that people keep connected, which is, again, what keeps us stable.
Excellent. We were talking about as far as at-risk types of groups. I remember we mentioning as far as white males, Caucasian males that may be a little bit more advanced in age, probably 50s and older.
That's a high risk for suicide, the older males. I know statistically that is a high risk population. I would say sort of anecdotally, these are people who often are for the first time on their own. Often it's the wife that makes the social connections. And, you know, I think, again, a lot of it goes back to social isolation. They're losing friends. They're losing connections and sometimes have lost the person who made those connections for them. So, you know, that can be a very difficult time in life for people.
Yeah, I also kind of look at as far as with a lot of job displacement, as far as middle management and a lot of corporations and their views as far as Caucasian males that are in their 50s, late, early 60s, as far as that also can be a traumatic incident event in their life that could also trigger a lot of different types of thoughts. And
That and retirement. You know, I mean, again, to me, a lot of it goes back to connections, too. Connections and self-worth. But, you know, where do we make connections? You know, we make them in school. Then as we're aging, we make connections through our kids, through work. But when we lose those connections, you know, where do they come from? And it's just that's what keeps us stable.
Yeah, so isolation, but also continue to stay connected. And I know we talked a little bit earlier, but we touched on a little bit as far as like suicide and things along those lines. What are some areas that as far as for getting help, or what are some thoughts that you might have about suicide, different ages, prevalence?
Well, NAMI has a great program called Ending the Silence, and we've actually been approved to go into the Palm Beach school system. And it's a program that's taught by a family member or a person who has a mental health condition, and then a young adult. And it's a 50-minute program, so when we go into the schools, we'll often do kind of one after another, different periods in individual classrooms. It teaches about some of the symptoms of mental health conditions, some of the emerging symptoms a young adult may experience or see in someone else. And it teaches how you get help, what you can do.
Yeah, I know that these days, especially with teens, there's a lot with social media and as far as at risk and things along those lines.
Risk is high, yes.
So, and to see that there's, as far as resource through NAMI and program that out in the schools and things along those lines. Your thoughts before we go to commercial break on some other things that
I just, you know, again, think that if someone is thinking that they or a family member has a mental health condition or they have concern about someone, it's probably valid if you're seeing a change. Many people keep those symptoms to themselves. If they're if they are noticeable to someone else, then, you know, well, you kind of wonder, are they at stage 3 or stage 4 at that point? They need to reach out for help, or you can reach out for help on their behalf and give us a call. 588-3477. Give us a call and talk to our family support specialist and problem solve the best way to get some help.
An excellent way as far as for people to connect and really kind of learn more about NAMI. And how I really kind of first came in contact with NAMI was the NAMI walk. I know that's going to be coming up pretty soon. Could you, I mean, we're going to break pretty soon, but maybe kind of highlight for a little bit our listeners about the walk and
yeah.
things like that.
Our walk is on November 4th. It's at John Prince Park, and it's a fundraiser for us, but it also is to raise awareness and to help decrease stigma. So there are teams and there are individual walkers, and it is a fundraiser for us.
Excellent. The a nice time of year, probably be a little bit cooler from what I remember as far as for a walk. And we're going to be going to a short commercial break. We appreciate you being a part of your Sunday afternoon, and we'll be right back after the short commercial break. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon.
Like the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook to learn more about their mental health service and Addiction Resources Center. Located in Lantana, Florida, the Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers can't. Call anytime, 855-202-4220. We'll be right back.
The Family Center for Recovery in Lantana is the only treatment center in Florida owned and operated by a triple board certified psychiatrist. This means the Family Center for Recovery does treatment the right way. They treat substance abuse, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, anxiety, teens and adults at all levels of inpatient care. Check out the innovative, life-changing treatment the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana has to offer at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Premature birth is the number one killer of babies. Those who survive often face birth defects and complications that affect them for life. For hundreds of thousands of families in the United States, this is the hardest thing they will ever have to face. And it's even harder on the baby. March of Dimes is providing education and support to families and funding life-saving research to give every baby a fighting chance. You can help. Do something today. Give them tomorrow at marchofdimes.org/tomorrow.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
We are back. Thank you for joining us and making us a part of your Sunday afternoon. Tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery show. I'm your host, Peter Nathan. With me today, Marcia Martino. She's the executive director at NAMI. And we're talking before break about the annual walk that takes place over at John Prince Park. So can you maybe give the details again for our listeners?
Absolutely. The walk is on November 4th, but coming up on September 16th, we have our kickoff. Our kickoff is going to be at the South Florida Science Center and Aquarium, and that will be on September 16th at 11. If someone is interested in getting a team together or just walking themselves and want to come in and find out a little bit more about NAMI before the walk, give us a call and register to go to the kickoff on September 16th. Or if you have an interest in just participating in the walk and not going to the kickoff, you can give us a call or you can find information on our website about both of those.
The website for our listeners is
NAMIPBC.org.
So if somebody is out there listening and they're thinking, what an excellent organization, I'd like to get involved. I maybe like to do some volunteering for the walk or as far as NAMI in general. Could you maybe kind of go for our listeners?
We have kind of two different routes for volunteers. So as I had said earlier, all of our programs and services are delivered by people with mental illness or family members. If someone fits into one of those categories and wants to volunteer, they could potentially become an instructor of a class. They could become a support group leader. But one of the requirements is that you participate first. So you'd have to take a class or go to support group meetings. If it seems like you're a good fit, we send people to the training, the sort of national training that is available, our state training, and they can become an instructor or a support group leader. But again, you have to attend those first. You have to first be a participant. Then the other route to go is to come in and help in our office. We need help with putting together curriculum materials and some data entry. And another route would be to help with any of our fundraising events, the walk, obviously, you can imagine, requires a tremendous amount of effort. So, and we have an annual luncheon coming up. So Laurie McInerney is our development person, and she has some great things going. So she's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of need for volunteers in that area.
Excellent. A way for people to get involved and to give back. It's refreshing and exciting. The takeaways, and we've got the week coming up, Sunday, and one big takeaway, and there are a lot of takeaways that I came up with, value the lived experience. And we're getting ready for our closing thoughts and things like that. For our listeners out there, what would maybe be a closing thought you'd want to have them maybe kind of keep in mind and share throughout the week as things come up?
Well, the value of the lived experience, I think, is a good takeaway, Peter. You know, if someone is diagnosed with cancer, for example, one of the first things, I have many friends who have developed cancer, and one of the first things you want to do is talk to someone who's had that diagnosis and talk to them about their treatment. And it's the same thing with a mental health diagnosis. You know, you want to talk to someone, and you also want to see someone who has been successfully treated so that you can have some hope that your future will be better, or your family member's future will be better. And that's the kind of thing that you get from interacting with someone who has the lived experience.
That is the thing, that hope. Knowing that there is an organization like NAMI out there, as far as, and that there are people who do care, and people that their peer support, that their support group, somebody that they can continue to and have at their call, as far as.
And mental health conditions are treatable. You know, they improve with treatment. Many times to the point where the person is no longer experiencing symptoms. You know, get help. Don't stay in stage two or stage three for your entire life. You know, there is help.
I know that we've had research, and there are certain things that we've learned. We've come a certain way, a long way, I would hope, over the last 20, 30, 40, even 60 years. What are some things that maybe you see as far as for the future, as far as research and areas that things might be headed? Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that there is a movement to try to decrease stigma. I think that mental health conditions have come out of the closet to a degree. There's still a long, long, long way to go. But I think one of our biggest barriers is people not reaching out for help. I mean, there's a lack of resources, and we can't deny that. But almost worse than that are people who just don't even look for help. You know, they bite the bullet and live their life depressed, or live their life with an anxiety disorder or a thought disorder. So reducing that stigma so people aren't afraid to ask for help is coming around. I think the opioid crisis has brought substance use out of the closet. And again, with the co-occurring piece of that, there's often the mental health diagnosis involved with that. So, you know, we're hoping we're taking a step forward with reducing stigma.
Well, if anything, I know that since I've learned about NAMI, and for those of you who haven't been to their website, a lot of excellent information, what we talked about, you're going to visit and see that there as well. I thank you so much, Marcia, for coming in and being a guest here on the show and enlightening our listeners and giving us some values. Your thought before we go, thanks again for joining us.
No, I really appreciate it, Peter. And I hope that perhaps our discussion will help someone who's kind of knows things aren't okay but has never reached out for help. I hope that they'll make that call and at least talk to someone.
And thanks again for joining us. Have an excellent week. We'll be back with you next week. Thanks again.
This has been the Family Center for Recovery Radio Show. To learn more about the center or to send a link of the show, visit FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Join us next Sunday at noon for the Family Center for Recovery Show.
CPAP user, soap and water cleaning may leave harmful bacteria, viruses, and mold that can make you sick. That alone will keep you up at night. Until now, SoClean.com is the world's first and only automated hands-free CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. SoClean kills 99.9% of all CPAP germs without soap, water, harsh chemicals, or even equipment disassembly. And now, you can try it risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-885-1144.
SoClean changed the CPAP experience for the better. My health has improved. It's simple to use, and I'm not worried about infections.
SoClean's revolutionary design makes it easy to clean your CPAP and protect you against CPAP-related illnesses. Plus, SoClean works with all popular CPAP devices to clean them in minutes. It really is that easy. Don't risk your health. Call SoClean.com now to try it risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-885-1144. This offer won't last. Call now. 800-885-1144. 800-885-1144.
Do you work in potentially a hostile work environment? In the case of an alarming number of people, according to a new comprehensive study by Rand Corp, Harvard Medical School, and the University of California, Los Angeles, they found that nearly one in five of us say that we face a hostile or threatening environment at work. Runs the gamut. Everything from bullying to sexual harassment. Up to 20%. Wow. 55% of us say that we face unpleasant and potentially hazardous conditions with an irregular basis. And only about 38% of us say that our current jobs offer good prospects for advancement. Yikes. Okay. And also half of us say that we work on our own time to meet the demands of our job. There's a lot to parse through here. What this does show is that sometimes our perception and reality might not be on the same page, but given how high these numbers are, there probably are a number of different issues. There have been some well-documented issues within the workforce. Some companies have been caught in the crosshairs, have included Google and Uber, for example, but it stands to reason that it could be more pervasive across any number of different companies and industries. The important thing is to identify something that you do think is toxic and try to figure out how to improve either the way you work within it or the company itself, rather than necessarily bearing the burden of that stress and that anxiety and that negativity that goes along with those types of numbers. For more stories, check out the Brian Mudd Channel on iHeartRadio.
Life in the here. News in the now. News Radio 1290 WJNO. West Palm Beach. What's next?
It's Barcelona.
Happens here.
Carnage and mayhem sicken us all.
News Radio